I will say it's a weakness and a strength at the same time. It's hard for me to work on something, to write something, if I'm not putting myself in it. And that's what drives me to create.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is animation director and illustrator, Fernanda Frick. Fernanda is the creator of the short film Here's the Plan, the graphic novel Trazos, with many more stories in development. In this episode, she shares with us how she finds motivation to push through big projects, how she learned how to write and develop a TV series with no prior knowledge of how to do it. She also shares why it's good to have multiple ideas in our back pocket and how every pitch is practice for the next. This interview was recorded in 2021. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
I'm Fernanda Frick, and I'm an director, creator, illustrator, and comic book artist from Chile. And I love creating stories for animation.
Why animation specifically?
I don't know, really. Like, I've always loved animation. I always knew that this was what I wanted to do, even when I was little. And actually, until I was like a teenager, I didn't have too much interest in anything that was in animation. I didn't watch live-action movies at all. So I always been more drawn out to animation.
Can you like give us like a brief sketch of your childhood and like what inspired you to pursue animation? Like, when did you know that it was a job that you could have?
Oh, so I think that, well, I always loved animation, and I'm not sure if I knew that you could work on it, but I remember watching like on Disney VHS tapes, like they will show you the movie, but there will also include like a little trailer saying like, oh, you can go to Disney World and you can go to the studio and watch how the animators work. You can watch over their shoulders as they draw Simba from The Lion King or whatever. I guess that was like the Florida studio that they closed later. But I remember seeing that, and I was like, when I was very little, like 5-6 years old, and I was like, oh, I want to be a Disney artist. I didn't knew that they were called animators, but I was like, yeah, I want to be a Disney artist. And then when I was 13, I got introduced to Miyazaki, to Ghibli films. And like the boyfriend of one of my older sisters gave me like a pirate DVD of Spirit Away as a gift. And the DVD had like the making of the film, and you could see, it was a very short documentary. Like, it was like a 7-minute featurette that showed Miyazaki working on the film and fixing stuff and even like cooking for the animators. Like, it was like, here's Miyazaki cooking ramen for the studio. And I was like, oh, so like real people do this. Like, I think that was the first time it was like, oh, this is something you can do. And I started like immediately. I remember like finishing watching that and downloading a pirate copy of Flash and starting experimenting. And yeah, this was like 15 years ago. I hope that Adobe doesn't sue me, but yeah.
And when you say you experimented, like, you're self-taught, like, you experimented until you knew how to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, can you talk about your journey to training yourself to become an artist?
Yeah. So, like, from that moment on, I was completely obsessed. So the first thing I did was to research, like, all the information I could find on schools, like, what kind of college can I go to learn all this stuff? And of course, I came across like CalArts and Govlon, and it was like, okay, so they're not in Chile, obviously. and I found out that there were like three universities that had animation as a career, but it was full of articles of people saying that studying animation in Chile was awful. Like, no one knew what they were doing. Like, the quality of the productions were very bad. So immediately I was like, okay, so I can't learn in Chile. And I started watching tutorials. Back then, like, Newgrounds was a really good site. I think Newgrounds still exists, but back then this was like 2005. So it was like the
peak moment. It used to be way more popular, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, of Flash animation and everything. So there were a lot of Flash tutorials. And I learned watching those tutorials, experimenting, trying to make films and uploading them to Newgrounds. And also, I ordered a copy of the Animator Survival Kit. So I was able to learn with books and stuff like that. But also, it was funny because I was like 14 by then, and I told my parents, like, I need to buy some animation books because there's no animation books in Chile. And they were like, no, we can't. You need our credit card to do that. So you can't borrow our credit card because they will clone it, and it's unsafe to buy stuff on the internet. And it's funny because now it's so normal, but back then it was like, no. So I started Googling, like, how can I pay for stuff on the internet? And I came across PayPal, and I discovered that some people pay other people by PayPal, by doing commissions and stuff. So I started getting jobs of creating illustrations and logos and stuff like that. So I will only get paid like $10 or $20 at a time until I saved enough to buy my first book, that was the Animator Survival Kit. So
So it was hard for it.
Yeah, it was pretty tough, but then I felt powerful because it was like, I don't need my parents' money. I can just do commissions on the internet and buy anything I want.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I feel like most artists in general kind of sometimes get imposter syndrome, but like, I've also heard that self-taught artists might get it a little bit more. Like, are you one of those artists? Do you deal with that at all?
Yeah, definitely. Mostly because I did went to college after. I studied at an animation university in Chile. That wasn't too good. Now it's better. Now the whole school system is a lot better. But then I studied 2 years and then I dropped out, so I never got like a college degree, and I always felt like, oh, I didn't go to college. I'm always like feeling that, oh, maybe some things will be different if I had gone to study someplace. So to this day, I still take like courses every time I can, like, to keep learning. Mm-hmm. So I guess the way I try to keep that imposter syndrome at bay is to try to keep learning, like, outlearn the imposter syndrome. But also, like, now that I'm older, like, I think I can see my strengths of, like, the strength of coming from a non-traditional background, like, even, for example, like, since I've been doing so many self-produced productions, and, like, I've been, like, a jack of all trades, like a Jane of all trades, I guess. Like, that's an advantage that not many people in the industry have, where, like, you choose a specialty and you only, like, focus on that. So I guess, like, every time I feel like, oh, no, like, they're going to find out that I don't know anything, like, I try to remind myself, like, no, you do know stuff, and you do have, like, a very specific set of knowledge that not everyone has.
I think I first came across your work when I saw Here's the Plan, which is a short film. Yeah. For the audience, here is kind of like the summary logline. A married cat dog couple of cupcake bakers dream of opening their own bakery. One day their oven breaks and they have to postpone their dream in order to earn money and replace it. Somewhere down the line, they drift apart from their dream and from themselves. And I just remember it being so sweet and lovely. And also at 18 minutes, I was like, what? Like, what? Like, just an epic undertaking to make such a long film, just because animation takes forever. So can you talk about what inspired you to create this short and the process of making it?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Like, I'm glad that you see that you saw it and that you liked it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you. So it was before Here's the Plan. I had made like three short films, like very short films, like 2 or 3 minutes long, that I made myself, like just me, my cat, and with some help, just me, my pajamas with my cat in my house, like, and I did have a little help from my boyfriend then, which is now my husband, and he will help me with compositing and stuff. But I thought, like, okay, so the next step in my career is to try to learn how to work in a team. And I want to learn how to direct, because by then I had, like, gone through Animation Mentor, which is this, like, animation school that... online animation school that you learn to be a character animator, and just that. So I thought, oh, I want to be a character animator. But when I finished, I realized, like, oh no, what I really like is to tell stories and to make my own characters and make my own stuff. So I think I'm going to try to be a director. So I set this plan for myself of, okay, I'm going to apply for a grant, a government grant, and I'm going to, so I can have money to make a bigger production and make a film that is not just me. And at the same time, I was in the initial years of the relationship with my husband, and we were very happy, and we're still very happy. But back then, I started noticing a trend in media where usually long-term couples or married couples will seem that they hated each other. Like, they were always, like, fighting or making fun of each other, and they follow, like, sexist stereotypes. And I thought, I didn't like that, because that didn't reflect my relationship, and it also didn't give much hope for the future. Like... there wasn't like a realistic portrayal of relationships in media that wasn't like overly romantic, or like romantic comedies or overly dramatic. So I was like, I want to create a story where you can see a couple that loves each other and they support each other and they work as a team. and the conflict comes from something else, and in this case was like to find if they were going to be able to succeed at creating a shared dream. So yeah, that was like both were inspirations for the movie, and usually in all my projects I have two inspirations. One is technical and one is like thematic, I guess. Like oh, this is what I'm feeling right now. This is the kind of story that is obsessing me right now. Mm-hmm. And this is what I want to express with my work. And the other is like, okay, time to make a short film. Like time to see how my characters will look in CG or something like that.
I think that's great that you have goals, technical and, thematic or emotional. That's really cool to hear about that. Kind of going back a little bit to studying with Animation Mentor, is that kind of where you met other animators and animation artists to work on this with? Like, where did you kind of go looking to recruit others to collaborate on this?
Oh, yeah. Animation Mentor did have a social factor where you could connect with other students abroad. But mostly, the 99% of the Here's the Plan team is Chilean artists. The only exception is are the voices that were Lindsay and Alex Molbutera, which is this couple of animators that are also married, and they had also done voice acting for their short films. So I asked them. But the whole team was Chilean, and it was comprised of mostly people I already knew, because I was pretty active in the animation, in the local animation scene. So I kind of knew like a lot of people. It wasn't too difficult to find people to work with me. And some of them were former classmates from university. Other were friends that I made at animation festivals in Chile. Others were former students, because I was also a teacher for a long time.
So the arts community sounds really thriving down there. Are there like animation studios around?
Yeah. It used to be very small, and it has been growing a lot in the past few years. There's like, remember I told you like when I was in high school, there were only three animation schools in Chile, and now there's nine.
Oh wow!
So it's a lot, because if you think of the size of our country, it isn't too big, and nine schools, it's a lot. So there's more and more students going graduating every year. And there's also a really cool animation festival called Chile Monos. So every year you go to Chile Monos, you meet new people, you reconnect with colleagues from the industry, and you get to get up to date with what everyone's doing. And it's even now a festival recognized by the Oscars, like whoever wins the festival gets Oscar qualification. There's a lot of small studios, and there must be like 20-30 studios right now, and most of them do TV series, because we do have a big not big, but I guess decent government funding to make TV series. Feature films are another story. Like, it's much harder to make a feature film in Chile, but yeah.
Why is that?
The grants are much smaller. So, like, recently there's this really cool feature film called Nahuel and the Magic Book. It premiered at Annecy this year, and that's the first one of the first Chilean animated feature films that has come out in the last 10 years. So hopefully it won't be another 10 years until there's another movie. But yeah, it's pretty difficult.
I see. Well, I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So after you had your team of, artists and production people, like, what was it like guiding a full team and being their leader?
It was very difficult. It was a definitive learning experience because I won't consider myself like the leadership type. Like, I'm very shy and I usually very like, I enjoy working on my own in solitude. So I really had to learn to communicate, and it's something I still learning to this day. But it was a lot of trial and error of trying to make myself understood and treat my artists with respect and don't burn them out. Because I'm also very, I set very high standards for myself. So without really meaning to, I also set really high standards for others. But it always was difficult for me to, like, to not be the stereotype of the director. Like, I didn't want to be Miyazaki, ironically. I didn't want to be Kubrick. Like, I didn't want to treat people badly to get the quality I wanted. So I guess at that time, the solution I found was I will fix so much stuff by myself. I will give notes to my crew. But if I noticed that I was asking too many changes and stuff like that, it will be like, no, it's okay. Like, let's leave it at this and I will change it later. And that meant that I took an enormous amount of work that ended up burning me out. Yeah, that was like the ugly part. But I did work with so many people that gave so much to the film. Like I'm very grateful to them because I don't know why they did it. Like I'm not a good salesman, so it's not like I said like, hey, come work with me in this film, it will win an Oscar and you will be famous. Like it wasn't like that. It was like, okay, so I have this short film, I want to make a really great short film, but I don't have too much money, like, do you want to do this with me? And they were like, yeah, and they really believed in the project, and they made the film like better than I could ever imagine. And I think to this day, most of them think fondly of the film. Like one of the animators is working like in Canada now in big films. I don't remember exactly the studio, but he's like an NPC or something. Like he was able to get into the international industry, and like he still had shots from Here's the Plan in his reel. So it's like amazing movies and a shot from Here's the Plan, and he's like that shouldn't be there. But like I really appreciate that because it means that they're still proud of that work.
Yeah, that's such a high compliment to still have on the reel. That's awesome. So at the end of the festival run, and when the hype dies down, like what happens next for you as a creator? Like, did you already have another idea ready to go or in process?
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. Like, when I was trying to came up with the marketing strategy and the festival strategy for the short film, one advice I read was, you have to have the next thing ready to go. So when you go to a festival or you win a prize or you get interviewed or something, you have to say, what are you working on next? Because the film is already done. You're not going to sell a short film. I mean, some short films become feature films or series, like they get redeveloped as something else. But this wasn't going to be the case. So, and I thought about that. I was like, eh, they must be exaggerating. Like, I don't need to make another thing. But so when I finished the festival run, I didn't have anything else. And also I was so burned out that I was like, I'm not going to do anything ever again. Like, I'm not going to, I can't picture myself having any other idea ever again. But funnily enough, that only lasted like 2 months for me. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to, maybe I should just like be a baker or find another career or something. Like, I don't think I can do another animation ever again. But that only lasted like 2 months for me. And then I was like, huh, I think I want to make a TV series now. And so I started thinking about that. And one day I said to my husband, like, hey, we should do like a sports anime. Like, why isn't there a sports anime about the Olympics? Like, why isn't there like a sports anime about weightlifting? And he was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, okay, let's make one. And we started like, and my husband Glenn had made his university thesis on writing TV series. So I was like, okay, so guide me through the process. Let's develop like a TV series. And so we started inventing the characters and putting together a pitch bible, and that's how we came up with Raise the Bar, which was this project that we later developed and sold to Netflix.
That's so cool. I really admire how you get the idea for what you want to do and then you just pretty much go do it. Like, you're not one of these people that kind of sit on the idea and mull it over for years, even if you may have like thought about it before. Like, when you get the fire, you just let it go. You let it burn.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's useful for me because I feel that I usually work a lot by trial and error. Like, I never get anything correct at the first try. So it really needs like a lot of iterations in the process. So yeah, like the earlier we start, more passes we get to do, and it gets better until it turns into a real thing.
Yeah, 100%. Another work of yours that I absolutely adore is your graphic novel, Trazos. For the audience, another summary. Simona was the promise of the national art scene until a complete failure made her decide not to create anything again. Leaving everything behind, she tries to forget ever being an artist. But passion won't disappear so easily. It's an endearing story for all ages about figuring out the confusing life in your 20s, fighting for what you believe in, and being true to yourself. I feel like a lot of us can relate to this. And when I read it, I was going to read like maybe like 50 pages and then read 50 pages the next day because it was like a busy moment. Like, I had a busy season at that time. And I ended up reading it in one evening.
Oh,
I was like, I couldn't put it down. But I was wondering, because I think it came out like a year within your short film, right? So like, were you working on this simultaneously to your fourth short film?
Yeah, definitely. It was like the graphic novel came before. I started working on the graphic novel before Here's the Plan, a lot of years before. Like, I started writing Trazos on 2010, and I started working on Here's the Plan on 2014. But the thing about Trazos is that I had never written a script before, and I never had made a comic book before. So I kind of write a draft and rewrite it and rewrite it and make some pages and then throw them away and make them again. And so it was a lot of trial and error. And I will also like leave it in a drawer, like give up on it for a couple of years and then go back to it until like the year I won a grant, a government grant for Here's the Plan. I won a government grant for Trazos at the same time.
Oh, wow.
For a moment, I was doing both things at the same time. So I will like, I will work like a normal office job, making the short film like from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And then at night we'll like thumbnail out the book and like sketch it out. But very quickly it became absolutely unsustainable. So I had to put the book on pause until I finished the short film. And the short film took 2 years. So when I finished the short film in 2017, I started working on the book again. But then I had to promote the short film and I had to travel a lot and do a lot of marketing stuff, like very, very desperate because I was like, oh no, we worked so hard on this film. Like people have to see it. I have to make people see it. But so I didn't work too much in the book and I was kind of ready to give up on the book, but
no.
Luckily I found a publisher in Chile. So then I signed with a publisher in Chile, and then I had to finish the book.
That's one way to get motivated to finish something.
Yeah, definitely.
So in regards to your graphic novel, can you talk about the process from like script to full execution? Did you like draw it by hand on paper and scan in color in the computer, or like what was your process?
Yeah, no, it was mostly digital. I did thumbnail the whole thing on paper because the thumbnailing stage is just thinking. It's just like figuring out how to translate over the script to drawing. So I find out that I think better on paper, like It's a mess, like it's just scribbles that only I understand, but it helps me to not get caught up in getting it to look pretty. And then I do everything else in the computer where I can just erase and fix and make everything look pretty. But yeah, it was the process was that I was learning to do everything as I made the graphic novel. So at the time, I took a lot of courses on screenwriting. I had already dropped out of college by then, so I would sneak in to my husband's. Like he had screenwriting classes at his college, and I would sneak into his university classes.
You were so rogue. Oh my god.
Yeah. I mean, I asked permission for the teacher.
Okay. I just picture you like sneaking in behind your husband and taking a seat like under the table so no one sees you. That's what I was picturing.
No, but yeah, it was legal, I guess. But yeah, it was very nice because like that teacher encouraged me to write the script for the graphic novel and he will give me feedback. And so I learned by doing. Like I remember the first draft I wrote. It was a mess. And I showed them to this teacher and he said, like, okay, but write another draft and this time write it in scenes. And I was like, what do you mean by scenes? Like And I that was the first time I was like, oh, like, right. Like when you watch a movie, everything is in scenes and a script should be the same. Like it shouldn't be like a full long string of actions and dialogues. Like you have to structure it with scenes. And it was so obvious, but that's just to show like how little I knew when I started writing it.
Yeah.
So I started, I read screenwriting books, I read like Save the Cat and all that stuff, and made another draft and tried to learn story structure with that, until I finally had like a decent script which I could start drawing. Like, yeah, it was a lot of rewrites in the draft stage, but once I started thumbnailing out and drawing it, it was the same as the script. Like, I didn't, mm-hmm. I don't usually draw and write at the same time. Like, it's, like, I don't have that skill.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely flipping brains a little bit. Like, you have to ask yourself a different filter of questions when you're revising each, you know? Like, what advice can you give to others who want to make their own graphic novel someday?
I will say, like, this is a bit ironic, but I will say, like, start with a short story first. Like, because I jumped out from making, like, 20 pages fanzines. Yeah, like 20 page indie comics to making a 230 graphic novel. And I thought, oh, that's easy, but not really. And that's why it took me like 8 years to make the story. So I will say, like, start small and find your voice in telling comics first, like not only like your writing style, but also like your narrative style from panel to panel, the way you compose pages and everything else. Yeah, everything like gets so much more complicated when making a graphic novel. But then also, like if you really want to make a graphic novel, like, just be very structured about it. Like, have a script, then thumbnail the whole thing out so you can see it's working, and then start sketching and drawing it and make it look pretty. Like, that's the last step of the of the process, I think. I think the writing stage and the thumbnailing stage is so much more important and the hardest part. And then you just can, like, put on a podcast and clean up the drawings and ink, and it's going to be so much easier because you don't have to think that much anymore. Like, you just draw.
Yeah, I really support artists who want to learn how to write, because it is the easiest way to make your revisions rather than redrawing like a whole sequence.
Yeah.
And not only it saves your, you know, neck, shoulders, hands from the stress of drawing. So I love that advice. That was part one of my chat with animation director and illustrator Fernanda Frick. Stay tuned for part two, coming out on Thursday. The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Tunes. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle, edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.